I'd like to talk about disparities in general, and I think some of the issues that we'd love to have as in the discussion standpoint of this. As Lauren mentioned, I run the liver clinic at Duke, and so we have almost 2,000 patients with viral hepatitis right now, and I'll talk to you about some of our experiences as these things translate forward. For my disclosures, in that liver clinic, we do clinical trials mainly of drugs, new drugs for hepatitis C to try to move the field forward. And later in the presentation, I will talk about off-label with bosepravir and telaprevir. So, the objectives I want to do is sort of lay the groundwork a little bit for the epidemiology issues that come up, and then talk about some of what I see are the barriers, and then actually I'm going to, in the discussion, ask my colleagues up here with the public health backgrounds to work more on the social justice aspects and help us work through how we can eliminate some of these things even more. So when I think about the challenges with viral hepatitis, these are hard diseases mainly because they're so quiet. And screening and prevention strategies are very quiet when you have hard diseases. Most of the patients that come see me for the first time are shocked because they felt well. And they can't understand how, when I tell them they may have had these viruses for years, it's just beyond what most patients can fathom. The other issue is that current screening programs are ineffective, and there's been a lot of talk at this meeting about some of that, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. Treatment has its major challenges as well. We've got great treatment for hepatitis B. Hepatitis B, especially for me, is one that we really should be able to impact. We have all the tools that we need. We just have to implement them well. Are you able to go see a provider? Does that provider know how to treat you? There's access issues all the way around. Can you afford it? The cost of these treatments are very expensive. And then tolerability, especially for hepatitis B, is a major issue. It doesn't reach all of our patients, and the new steps forward are great, but there's more to go. And the outcomes are not acceptable, but getting better. So why do we care? Well, these are estimates that we think we have more than 1 million Americans with chronic hepatitis B and upwards of 4 million Americans with hepatitis C, ultimately leading to, we think, more than 150,000 deaths in the next 10 years. And these, as a clinician, these are deaths that don't need to happen. And every time I take care of one of these patients, I know that these are things that we could have prevented, and that's very hard. So let's talk about acute viral hepatitis. So these are the new infections. And the good news is these are dropping. Estimated 43,000 infections in 2007, way down over the last two decades. But there's still pockets where we have issues. The group that's 25 to 44 years, non-Hispanic blacks, injection drug users, and then men who have sex with men are all groups that still have unacceptably high rates. If you think about acute hepatitis C, again, much better. It's dropping. 90% down from 1990, I must say, with the caveat of given the surveillance programs that we have. But again, we have concerning rates in the 25 to 39 year group, American Indians and Alaska Natives, and injection drug users. So the bigger burden really of disease is in chronic viral hepatitis, and NHANES provides us the best understanding of this. If you think about hepatitis B, the prevalence of chronic hep B looks at around 0.27%. That translates into that a million plus group, and this appears to be down. Although NHANES oversamples for African Americans, and there's concern that it may underrepresent the Asian Pacific Islander group, and so I do not think this necessarily represents this well. And this is one of the demonstrations to show it. This is a morbidity and mortality weekly report from 2006. They looked at a program in New York, and in the six-month period, they tested 1,836 people. And you see over down here, there you go, 14.8% were Hep B positive. And if you looked, according to country of birth, 21.4% if you were from China. So this clearly requires a community-by-community approach to how to deal with understanding where hepatitis B is. So the IOM came in on this well as far as, and we now have standard guidelines that if you are from an endemic country, listed here on the right at more than 8% or 2 to 7%, these groups of patients should be screened, and the strategies need to be improved to get there, especially for the Asia-Pacific Islander group. So let's talk about hepatitis C, and again, we think about 4 million Americans have been exposed to hepatitis C, higher in non-Hispanic blacks, low family income, and more than 20 sex partners in the surveys that have been done. This report also found that 1.3% had actual hepatitis C RNA in their blood. So these people are walking around with chronic hepatitis C infection. And three characteristics brought most of these people out, which was abnormal ALT, liver enzymes, any history of injection drug use, or a transfusion prior to 1992. And I must say, I show this slide a lot when I'm speaking in our community, which talks about the overall U.S. population having a 1.6% prevalence. The group that was 40 to 49 at the time of this survey, which you have to add 8 or 9 years to that group, so I really think of the group in their 50s currently as the highest group. But blacks then were the biggest group at 9.4%, black men 40 to 49 are now, I think, 50 to 59, 13.6%, translating to a 1 in 7 to 1 in 8 African-American men may have hepatitis C. So who is not in NHANES? Because NHANES is also, there's concern for that it doesn't accurately represent hepatitis C. So incarcerated populations, you have to have a door to be in NHANES. It's a door-to-door survey. So if you don't have a door, as in prison, or if you're homeless, you have a higher rate of hepatitis C. I'd like to highlight this study from Baltimore with homeless families. 19% of the adults were hep C positive. None of the children, but 19% of the adults. And the study in Los Angeles, 50% of the men were hep C positive. So, and what does this translate into ultimately? As I said, these are preventable complications that we see. And this study looked at mortality rates from 1995 to 2004 with an increase of 123%. And the mean age of these people is 55, so we're seeing people who are in these productive years of life and the impact on them, their families, and our society for their the potential life years lost and contribution to the society is immense. The highest mortalities were in men, the group that's 45 to 64, Hispanics, non-Hispanic blacks, Native Americans, and Alaska Natives. So what do we need? Again, it's been discussed at this meeting, we need a better approach to screening. Risk factor screening has failed. We actually was talking about this with Lisa earlier. This is this is a disease that affects men. It means that they have to actually go to see a doctor. And then at that doctor visit, they have to confess to a hepatitis C risk factor, and then that provider has to hear them and actually order a test. And those things just don't happen very often. And so there needs to be a new strategy. There's been a lot of discussion about the age-based screening, which I'm glad to see that being studied. It would be nice to see a different kind of approach to see if that can be accepted, if that can make a difference. Also, I think the community-based screening approach makes a lot of sense. Again, that whole men going to doctor thing. And hopefully we can change the way this happens. I'm not going to say too much about HIV and viral hepatitis. It's covered in other aspects of this meeting, but it remains a significant issue for us, with 30% of Americans who have HIV also have hepatitis C. And amongst those who have not been vaccinated, which is a problem in and of itself, 8% of chronic hep B in the HIV group. I do want to mention hepatocellular carcinoma, because I think that is, for me as a clinician and for any of us who take care of these patients, that is what we are seeing. And that is really, every time I meet somebody with liver cancer now, given that most are from viral hepatitis, I feel like we've failed them. somewhere along the way, our system should have helped them, and we didn't. This looks at the incidence in the United States between 1975 and 1998. And the white group here is the white patients, the black group is the black, and the gray is the other, which would include Asians. And you see that all the groups are actually rising, with the highest in the other category, which will include the Asians. But incidence essentially doubled. And we think that we're winning, we're winning the war against cancer in so many cancers, but not against liver cancer. And viral hepatitis is the main reason why not. The other trend that's been noticed is the group that's dying of liver cancer is getting younger, and that's because of the years of viral hepatitis. Men are 3 times more common than women, Asians 2 times more than blacks, Hispanics 2 times more than whites, so we see the disparities there. And again, most of these people present very late, median survival is 8 months. So, this is a liver cancer in the setting of a cirrhotic liver that we need to change. This is an even bigger problem worldwide, third leading cause of cancer death, up to 1 million deaths worldwide. And most of that related to viral hepatitis. I also want to mention liver transplantation, because I think that's one of the other areas where there's concern for disparities, and given that most of these, the liver transplants are occurring in patients with viral hepatitis, that's another relevant discussion. So the main two reasons people get a liver transplant in the United States is for a complication of cirrhosis, and 57% of those patients have viral hepatitis. Or liver cancer. And if you catch liver cancer when it's early, not spread outside the liver, it is cured by a liver transplant. We don't catch enough people at that point, but many of them are getting transplants. And when they do, it's most of them from viral hepatitis. So one thing that's come up with transplant, we changed a lot in 2002, and I would argue from a social justice perspective, I'm disappointed in my group for other things, but I'm kind of proud of it for this one. This is a much more fair system than it was prior to 2002. Prior to 2002, how long you'd been on a waiting list mattered a lot. A patient could be called in from home for liver transplant while somebody else was dying in an ICU. And waiting time mattered a tremendous amount. There was subjective assessment, so how much your doctor advocated for you mattered a whole lot. But I think in general that access issue about waiting time was a huge thing. Poor patients who were unlikely to be referred to a hepatologist until very late in the disease would often die. So now, since 2002, waiting time is minimized, the subjective assessments are gone, it's based upon lab tests. And the list is updated every hour, essentially, and so it's a much more fair system. Before MELD in the 90s, when it was looked at, black patients were, compared to whites, were less likely to undergo liver transplant, more likely to die or become too sick for transplant. And in an analysis that one of my fellows did in the post-MELD era, race is no longer a predictor of survival or likelihood of transplant. However, one would argue that they're not adequately represented on the transplant list. In the pre-MELD evaluation, 8.4% of the patients were black on the list, 7.9% received livers. If you think at that time, blacks were 13.6% of the U.S. population, and they have a higher rate of hepatitis C, they really should have been getting more transplants. So there's still an issue there with access, but it's getting better. And in the post-MELD era, again, it's not as high as one might expect it to be, but it's better. So future directions, I did just want to, I can't speak anywhere right now without bringing up the fact that the protease inhibitors are coming. They are given in combination with the current standard of care of peg interferon and ribavirin, but the response rates are so much better, and for many patients, it's going to be a shorter course of therapy. Probably about half or maybe two-thirds of patients are going to only need 24 weeks of treatment. But the gray bars here, this is telaprevir and boceprevir, the gray bars represent the control groups. And we have most Americans, when they come to our office for treatment, we say, you have about a 40% chance of being cured. We're now going to be able to talk to them about numbers in the 60s and the 70s, and that's a much better conversation. I think that has been, a barrier to screening programs. And so I hope that that becomes a better discussion in the future. The other thing that's come up is the better response rate in racial groups. When I see African American patients, we have to tell them that their chances of cure are probably 20-25% with current treatment. This is a smaller sample I'll give you, but there have been a couple reports now that show the response rate in over 60% with the protease inhibitors. So again, I hope that will change the way people think about treatment and screening. So I just want to sort of sum it up in that I think we've seen a lot of progress in the acute infections. There's clearly some issues that remain there. The younger groups remain a concern for us. Chronic hepatitis, the burden of disease there, and the fact that these are acquired infections really needs a change in the screening approach. And I'm encouraged to see that that's changing, especially in these groups that remain key groups at risk. And those are the key to prevention of cancer and the complications of cirrhosis. I do take care of a lot of people who die, what motivates me is that we have a lot of the tools to help, and if we can improve our screening approach, improve our prevention approach, treat more people, it'll get better for the future. So. I only just want to acknowledge, I've been working with the National Virus Hepatitis Roundtable the last couple of years. These people have taught me a lot about advocacy and how to go to Washington, D.C., but they're a remarkable group of people, and I just want to thank them all. So thank you very much.